For 10.
Cecilia Lamas, for the record. Commission President Lachey, I'm going to go grab Commissioner Cabildo so she can rejoin the meeting.
Very good.
Opening item number 10. Item number 10 is case number DIR 2023-2587. TOC SPP HCA-1A, an environmental case ENV 2023-2588-CE. The project area is located at 5271 West Sunset Boulevard within Council District 13. At this time, we'll hear from staff.
Good morning, Commissioners. I am Yamila Prisuelo with the Department of City Planning, presenting item number 10 of the agenda. Before you today is an appeal of the entire director's determination for a transit-oriented communities and project permit compliance request at 5271 West Sunset Boulevard. Please note that the following presentation is available online for anyone attending this meeting virtually. Additionally, please note that the presentation slides following this cover page will be numbered in the upper right-hand corner for your convenience. I will be noting which slide I'm on whenever a transition happens. Next slide. Slide number 2. The proposed project includes the demolition of a two-story, four-unit apartment building and accessory structure and the construction, use, and maintenance of a four-story, 16,820-square-foot mixed-use building consisting of 19 dwelling units and 570 square feet of commercial floor area within Subarea B mixed-use boulevards of the Vermont Western Station Neighborhood Area Plan, SNAP. Specific plan. The 19 residential units will be comprised of 11 one-bedroom units, 6 two-bedroom units, and 2 three-bedroom units. Next slide. Slide number 3. This site is within the Hollywood Community Plan area and within Subarea B mixed-use boulevards of the SNAP specific plan. Next slide. Slide number 4. An update of the Hollywood Community Plan was adopted by City Council on May 9, 2023 and became operative on February 11, 2025. A building permit was filed before the effective date and is vested to the local planning and zoning rules that were in place at the time the complete application was submitted. Therefore, the project is not subject to the new Hollywood Community Plan. The applicable zoning for the site, which is outlined in blue, is C2-1D and has an underlying general plan land use designation of highway-oriented commercial. The surrounding area is developed with commercial and residential buildings. Next slide. Slide number 5. As seen on the maps, part of the subject site is located within a half-mile radius from the Hollywood Western Red Line, which qualifies the site as Tier 3 under the TOC guidelines. Next slide. Slide number 6. The site is eligible for Tier 3 incentives of the Transit-Oriented Communities Program and can qualify for density, floor area ratio, and parking as base incentives, and up to 3 additional incentives for setting aside 11% of the base 11 units for extremely low-income households. The proposed project is setting aside a total of 2 units for extremely low-income household occupancy, which meets the set-aside requirements for base and additional incentives. As such, the project was granted a 70% increase in density, a 2% increase in floor area ratio, and 3 additional incentives regarding the reduction in open space width and setbacks and increase in height. Next slide. Slide number 7. On December 24th, 2024, one appellant filed an appeal of the entire director's determination. In the first appeal point, the appellant claims the project involves the demolition of a historic building. However, the site has not been identified as a historic resource by local or state agencies, nor is it eligible for listing in any historic registers. Therefore, the director's approval is appropriate. In the second appeal point, the appellant claims that the proposed project is not compliant with the Vermont Western SNAP specific plan. As indicated in the letter of determination, the proposed project complies with all the applicable provisions of the Vermont Western SNAP's regulations, as well as the development standards and design guidelines in conjunction with the TOC Affordable Housing Incentive Program. In the third and fourth appeal points, the appellant claims that the project does not provide the required number of replacement units and the project will result in hardships due to tenant displacement. The project was found to be compliant with the applicable regulations and conditions set forth by the Vermont Western SNAP regulations and the TOC guidelines, including conditions to meet the replacement requirements as determined in the Los Angeles Housing Department's Housing Crisis Act, or SB 8, replacement unit determination for replacing 4 units as affordable units and ensuring that the tenants impacted by this development are provided with appropriate relocation assistance, including the right of return and the right of first refusal under the Ellis Act, SB 330, and SB 8. The project is required to provide the replacement units and meet the tenant protection regulations in compliance with the Housing Crisis Act. On April 8, 2025, Council District 13 provided a letter claiming that the property owner is not in compliance with the Ellis Act and the Housing Crisis Act, resulting in a specific adverse impact. They also claimed that the Resident Protection Ordinance, which became effective on February 11, 2025, should apply to the project. Planning staff reviewed the letter and have the following in response. The Ellis Act allows a property owner to remove rental housing units either for demolition or to remove the rental unit permanently for rental housing use. In 2019, the state legislature adopted Senate Bill 330 and subsequently amended it with Senate Bill 8 and Assembly Bill 1218. These laws are commonly known as the Housing Crisis Act. These bills establish in state law the ability of existing occupants to occupy their units until 6 months before the start of construction activities. An applicant can apply to withdraw their units from the rental housing market at any time under the Ellis Act. However, the tenants are allowed to remain in their units until 6 months prior to the start of construction per the Housing Crisis Act. Under state law, it is the responsibility of the owner to comply with both requirements, and the notice of application to withdraw units that the owner sends to the tenants when a property owner submits an Ellis application clearly states that the tenants have the right to remain in their unit until 6 months before the start of construction. The letter states that there are legal proceedings occurring between the tenants and the landlords the legal right to stay is available to the tenants under state law. The resident protection ordinance does not apply to this project as it is vested to the developmental rules in effect prior to the ordinance's effective date of February 11, 2025. Regarding the claim of a specific adverse impact, there is no evidence of a specific adverse impact that would be caused by the project. Government Code Section 65589.5 D2s, a local agency may only disapprove a housing development project for very low, low, or moderate income households or an emergency shelter based on a specific adverse impact on the public health or safety. Per Government Code Section 65589.5 D2 and Chapter 1 of the Los Angeles Municipal Code Section 1222A25B, a specific adverse impact is defined as a significant, quantifiable, direct, and unavoidable impact based on objective, identified, in written public health or safety standards, policies, or conditions as they existed on the date the application was deemed complete. State law has indicated that specific adverse impacts are rare. Specifically, Government Code Section 65589.583 states it is the intent of the legislator that the conditions that would have a specific adverse impact upon the public health and safety arise infrequently. In summary, the property owner is required to comply with state laws such as the Ellis Act and Housing Crisis Act. The Resident Protection Ordinance does not apply as the project is vested prior to its effective date, and no specific adverse impact has been identified in accordance with the regulations outlined in Government Code Section 65589.5. Therefore, the director's approval is appropriate. Next slide. Slide number 8. In the 5th through 7th appeal points, the appellant claims that the project does not qualify for a CEQA categorical exemption as it results in significant impacts, including traffic congestion and obstruction of sunlight and airflow for existing buildings. As demonstrated in the Class 32 justification under case number ENB-2023-2588-CE, the proposed project meets all criteria to qualify as an infill site under the Class 32 CEQA exemption. The applicant submitted a noise and air quality study prepared by Caja Environmental Services, LLC, that demonstrated the proposed project will not have a significant impact upon the environment. Furthermore, the project is located within a transit priority area and under Senate Bill 743. Aesthetic impacts such as shade, shadow, light, and glare cannot be considered significant for infill projects within such areas. The appellant has not submitted substantial evidence in the record to demonstrate that the proposed project will have a specific adverse impact. As such, the project qualifies for a CEQA exemption under Categorical Exemption Class 32. Next slide. Slide number 9. Given that the project complies with the TOC guidelines, the Vermont Western SNAP specific plan, and the Los Angeles Municipal Code, staff recommends that the commission deny the appeal, determine that the project is categorically exempted from CEQA pursuant to state CEQA statute and guidelines, Article 19, Section 15.3.32, Class 32, and sustain the Director of Planning's determination and adopt the condition of approval and findings. Next slide. Slide number 10. That concludes staff's presentation. I'm available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no speaker cards for the appellant or the applicant. I just want to make sure they're not somewhere in the audience.
Sorry, sir. Are you the applicant or the appellant? Okay, so first let's clarify that the appellant is not present. So I have...
Is the appellant present or no?
Richard Fleming? Okay.
So...
Okay. We're going to talk to the appellant first. Yeah.
Good morning. My name is Richard Fleming, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself and the other residents.
And, sorry, Richard, how long do you think you'll need?
Oh, 7 minutes.
Okay.
All right, thank you. I'll be speaking on behalf of myself and the other residents of the 5271 West Sunset Boulevard Tenants Union. We've lived in this building for 16 and 4 years, respectively, and we've built our lives here, our homes, our communities, and our future. We have no desire to leave, and yet we're being forced out by the new owner who purchased our building in 2022 with the intent to demolish and will replace it with a high-rent mixed-use development. This building has been a part of Hollywood's history since its construction in 1920. It's Mediterranean architecture, original hardwood floors, coved ceilings, and vintage built-in cabinets reflect a time when design prioritized beauty and livability. It's possibly the last original residential structure of its kind on this stretch of Sunset Boulevard, predating even the Hollywood sign and the LA City Hall where we find ourselves today. Its demolition would not just be the end of a building, but the erasure of an irreplaceable piece of Los Angeles history, and has not been adequately assessed on this subject. We would be forced to uproot our lives so that a generic 19-unit complex with no allocated parking spaces can be erected, most likely to sit empty like so many similar projects. But beyond the physical impacts are the human ones. Taking an average of the current rental market in our area for a 2-bedroom unit, if forced to move, our rent would increase by 278% per month. We'd soon be responsible for coming up with, on average, an extra $3,200 more per month just to cover rent in a comparable unit. That amount doesn't reflect utilities and pet fees and the cost and labor of moving. It'd be 2 moves if we decide to exercise our right of return. It doesn't factor in inflation or the potential of having to move to a building that's not rent stabilized. We'd also be paying new and higher security deposits and would be forced to put our credit scores in jeopardy by applying for tenancy. Those of us who qualify to return and would choose to do so, there's been no guarantee of how long we'd be displaced for, all the while paying these new and higher costs. We're not even convinced the applicant has the financial means to see this project through at all, let alone in a timely manner before the relocation assistance would run out. We could potentially be displaced for years, and the current relocation assistance offered does not adequately cover the significant increase of costs, which we would be burdened with while either waiting to return or having to move on. Furthermore, with the current average rental cost, there is nothing even close to comparable in this area at our current monthly rent and square footage or amenities. Our home is centrally located to the entertainment studios where some of us work, and means we'd not only be searching for new housing, but possibly also new employment. We're essentially being forced to start our lives over by no fault of our own. We've made multiple proposals to the applicant for a more equitable and justifiable relocation package, which have been outright rejected. Furthermore, the applicant is currently suing us for unlawful detainer and eviction as a desperate attempt to intimidate us. Under SB 8, we have a right to remain in our unit until 6 months prior to construction activities. As of right now, no demolition date has been set. Our very presence at this hearing today illustrates that the project determination is still unresolved, so how can we be compelled to vacate under these circumstances? We want to be clear, we're not opposed to affordable housing at all. But this project is not affordable, not equitable, and not in the public's best interest. It undermines the rights of tenants who have contributed to and supported this neighborhood for decades. We, the tenants, would be losing sense of community we've garnered in East Hollywood. We see doctors and dentists here and get regular medical care in this area. A good healthcare provider who you can trust and see results with is hard to find. We take part in the numerous amenities this neighborhood offers, including Griffith Park, the Los Feliz Library, Barnstable Park, and easy access to the 101 and 5 freeways, as well as the Metro Red Line. We're regular patrons of local cafes and markets where we're able to shop small and invest back into the neighborhood we love. Not to mention the safety our current building provides with gated parking for each tenant, a communal outdoor space, and in-unit laundry. These things are hard to come by for any renter in Los Angeles at any price and are also in jeopardy. This proposal is being pushed forward as if it's exempt from SNAP, TOC, and CEQA guidelines, even though it clearly has not been studied for its full impacts. It feels like the project has received rubber stamp approval without true oversight. We also have the full support of the East Hollywood Neighborhood Council, which voted unanimously to oppose this project. We respectfully appeal the approval of this project and ask that you protect our homes, our community, and our future. And thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. And now we'd like to hear from the applicant. You will also have 7 minutes. Thank you.
Good morning. Michael Iqbali, one of the applicants. I just want to say that the decision to withdraw the property from the rental market under the Ellis Act was not made lightly. We fully understand and respect the impact this process can have on the tenants. However, we have complied with all legal requirements, including providing proper notice periods and mandated tenant relocation assistance as directed by the housing authorities. The decision is driven by a long-term vision for the property. The existing structure is outdated and no longer meets the higher functional safety and environmental standards expected in today's housing market. The proposed development will not only make more effective use of the land, but will also enhance the neighborhood by introducing modern, safer, and energy efficient housing. Importantly, we have proactively addressed affordability concerns by including dedicated affordable units within the new project. Additionally, the current tenants have been offered the opportunity to return and reside in the newly constructed building once it is completed. At the request of City Council office, we even extended the deadline for tenants to vacate by an additional 6 months, pushing the deadline to February 5, 2025. Unfortunately, the goodwill effort has backfired, and two of the tenants have since refused to honor the agreement. Maintaining the current building is no longer financially sustainable given the steep rise in maintenance and operational costs. While we understand and emphasize with the concerns regarding the amount of relocation assistance, we must emphasize that our actions are fully within the rights granted to property owners under the Ellis Act. We have met all legal obligations and have taken care to respect the protections provided by tenants under current law and regulations. All procedures were carefully followed, verified, and updated as required. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I'll now open this item for public testimony. I have no speaker cards from the public. Is there anyone on Zoom?
Norma Morales, for the record. We have two callers, and we have the neighborhood council as well.
You have two callers and
the neighborhood council.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
So let's call on the regular callers and we'll call on neighborhood council at the end.
Norma Morales, for the record. Caller list with the last four numbers 5540. Please go ahead and unmute yourself. Dial *6 and proceed with your comment.
My name is Doug Haynes. I was an officer since 1989 and have been a board member of the East Hollywood Neighborhood Council since Wisconsin 17 years ago. This is quite frankly a terrible project. One of the worst we've ever seen. It has nothing to our community, either for affordability or aesthetics. The development displaces long-term tenants in both of the gorgeous 105-year-old fourplex. It constructs a mostly market-based box in a location where 1,200 of the market-based boxes have recently been approved within the quarter mile. I wish to point out that the Office of Historic Resources did no inspection of the site to support its erroneous conclusion that the fourplex lacks historic significance, nor did they review any photos or research in history. The applicant did not conduct the historic resource assessment. The East Hollywood Neighborhood Council found strongly that this project should be approached, and I will be opposing it as well. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Caller listed as BB, please go ahead and unmute yourself and proceed with your comment.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I would like to offer my support for this project, and I believe that the City Planning Commission should grant the appeal and impose the same conditions of those that were the prior identical request. The city needs more housing. The only housing cost is going to go down if there is more housing being built, especially in locations such as this one that calls for more housing and would be a great benefit to the community. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Then that was the last public speaker. I know you have the council member. Is there a certified neighborhood council rep?
Cecilia Lamas, for the record. I believe they were on Zoom. Let me just double check.
Yes.
So they are on Zoom. And how much time would you be giving them?
This is the neighborhood council?
Yes, and their letter is in the Google Shared Drive for DF submissions.
Okay, why don't we start with 3 minutes?
East Hollywood, neighborhood council, or for the record, please go ahead and proceed with your comment.
Hello, thank you for your time. My name is Colter Carlisle. I'm the vice president of the East Hollywood Neighborhood Council. I'm also a member of the East Hollywood Neighborhood Council Project Management Committee. The reason that we advanced opposed this project was because it was going to result in a net loss of affordable housing for East Hollywood. The other huge issue was this going to entirely block the sunlight on the building behind it. So there's on the north side of the building. So there's, I don't know how many units are in that thing, 100 units maybe. That particular side of the building, I think there's 10 or 20 units that are going to have their sunlight entirely blocked because of the heading of the new building that's being built directly south of it, which is this building on 5271 Sunset. So it's not just a matter of losing the units or making people from this one building, but that it's also going to essentially make the apartments north of it unbuildable because it's going to completely block all the sunlight to the only source of sunlight for the 10 to 20 units north of it. And so because of that, we just felt this was entirely untenable if this does qualify as a specific adverse public health effect that we don't want to see out in the neighborhood. And then lastly, this is one of the last inches left over from this time when Sunset was called Prospect. That whole street was lined with upper income and high-end houses and mansions. This is one of the last ones, if not the last one left, so we are a little in keeping the supply. This is not going to be one consideration for historical resource, but our neighborhood council does feel it's historical resource, and so we oppose the project and we support the appeal. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I have a speaker card for the for Ted Walker.
Thank you, Laura.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Ted Walker, the planning deputy at Council District 13, Councilmember Soto Martinez, speaking on item 10, the appeal of the proposed project at 5271 Sunset Boulevard. Our office has already stated our position on this appeal in our submission dated April 8th, 2025, but I'm here today to briefly summarize the contents of our letter. In October of 2023, our office was first connected with an organized group of tenants, now known as the 5271 West Sunset Tenants Union, facing displacement at this site. This project was initially filed in April of 2023, and the first approval was made on December 11th, 2024. It was subsequently appealed by the tenants, which is why this case is in front of your commission today. The Housing Crisis Act of 2019, otherwise known as SB 330, ensures that any existing residents will be allowed to occupy their units until 6 months before the start of construction activities with proper notice. 10 months after filing for entitlements, on February 5th, 2024, the owners of the property filed Ellis Act evictions for all four rent-stabilized units to be removed from the market, despite not having an approved project and no indication that construction activities would commence within 6 months. As of today, two of the units are still occupied, and they have been served with an unlawful detainer, though the project has not yet been approved, let alone started its pre-construction activities. Our office is in opposition to this project on the basis that it would have a specific adverse impact on the displaced tenants and that its approval is not in compliance with the Housing Crisis Act. Under SB 330, cities are given extremely limited discretion when it comes to approving or denying housing projects. However, local jurisdictions do have the authority to deny a proposed housing project given that it would have a specific adverse impact where there is no feasible method to satisfactorily mitigate as a result of the project being approved. Councilmember Soto Martinez believes the displacement of these tenants, the costs associated with moving, and their potential departure from this community are a specific adverse impact that comes with the approval of this project. Our office is of the opinion that the only method to satisfactorily mitigate these impacts would be to provide the displaced tenants with a relocation package that adequately addresses the burden of displacement. The council member was pleased to support deepening protections for tenants as part of the newly adopted Resident Protections Ordinance and believes that the RPO sets a standard that all tenants facing displacement should be able to access. Applying these standards for relocation and the right to remain could constitute a method of addressing the currently unmitigated specific adverse impacts to our constituents. Furthermore, as stated in our letter, the Housing Crisis Act also provides local municipalities with the ability to deny a housing project if the denial is required in order to comply with specific state or federal law. When the City of Los Angeles allowed for the applicant to file a notice to withdraw without an approved project and nowhere near the 6 month before construction activities deadline, it violated the tenant protections enumerated in SB 330. There is an extremely problematic mismatch in the timelines that apply to approving new housing projects and replacing protected units that the council member is interested in fixing. Unfortunately, this is not a unique situation that we see in Los Angeles. There are countless cases like this one where the city is allowing project applicants to evict rent-stabilized protected tenants without giving them the 6 months right to remain in advance of construction activities that they are entitled to through the Housing Crisis Act. If your commission cares about the rights of tenants facing displacement, they would be at least guaranteed to stay in their homes up until a project has been approved and all subsequent opportunities for appeal are exhausted. We cannot continue this this pattern of emptying naturally occurring affordable housing for the potential of more units and leaving our most vulnerable populations behind. The state has given tenants these protections the city of Los Angeles is not enforcing. And in this case, it should result in your commission sustaining the appeal. We believe that the only way to mitigate these impacts would be through the imposition of an adequate relocation package. Additionally, the rights to remain should be set forward clearly so that the city is compliant with state law and not evicting tenants prior to their legal time to stay. Without these at a minimum, we recommend you sustain these appeal. Should you decide today to move this project forward with the knowledge that its approval is not in compliance with the Housing Crisis Act, the council member will have no choice but to utilize his authority under Section 245 of the Los Angeles City Charter to assert jurisdiction over this appeal. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. That was the last speaker. Public testimony is now closed. Does staff have any further comments or clarifications?
Yes. This is Yamila Prisuelo with City Planning for the record. We just wanted to reiterate that in Exhibit G of the staff report, planning staff did review the site's eligibility as a historic resource with the Office of Historic Resource, and while the building was built in 1920, it was determined by the Office of Historic Resource that the project is not considered a historic resource for CEQA purposes. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll begin our deliberation on this item, and I am going to start on my left this time with Commissioner Cho. Any comments or questions? Okay, thank you. Commissioner Zamora?
This is Commissioner Zamora. I think I have a question regarding clarification as to why I heard the staff state that, you know, the project has been found to be compliant, including the replacement units, and there's no evidence of adverse impact, but yet I'm hearing from the council member and the appellant with respect to these tenant protections not being appropriately enforced by the city of LA. So I guess my fellow commissioners will have similar questions because it doesn't feel good to be asked to litigate something at this level when there's been a lot of opportunity to address some of these things. So I'm just going to say that that is one of my main questions, and I'll just let the other commissioners ask their questions.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Newhouse.
Sure, Commissioner Newhouse here. So sort of a mixed feelings on this, like I am on a lot of these sort of projects, which is, you know, I'm a firm believer we have a housing supply crisis in Los Angeles, which has created an affordable housing crisis in Los Angeles. And so when you look at a replacement of four units with 19 units, two of them being set aside, with a right to relocation assistance and a right to return, my inclination is to think that on the whole, that that's probably better policy. And at the end of the day, if we are adding housing units, we're creating supply. And at the end of the day, as painful as it sometimes might be project by project, we're actually creating more housing, and therefore we're actually creating more stock, more supply, and more affordability at the end of the day. With respect to the procedure, I appreciated Council District 13's presentation. I'm not convinced that the Housing Crisis Act overcomes the right to Ellis the property. As a lot of you know, I do a lot of this for a living, and I sit on this commission. I sat on the West LA Area Planning Commission for years, so I feel like I know this stuff pretty well. I'm not sure that that's a correct statement in light of the rights you get under Ellis. I'm also not sure that the JCO applies to this either. Having said all that, I think where I am on this is, look, the council office has made it clear they're going to 245 this. So to the applicant, I would say this isn't the end of the road. The council is going to take it over and exercise your jurisdiction under 245. I think it would be hard not to deny the appeal in this setting. But what I would say to the applicant is I would heavily suggest you work as closely as possible with CD 13 and try and find a way to meet some of these tenant needs a little better than has maybe happened, because just because we deny the appeal here doesn't mean you're not going to run into problems with the project at City Council. So that's my two cents on it.
Thank you. Commissioner Cabildo?
I have very similar comments. I feel that we are often at the Planning Commission asked to make decisions that are not within our lane. I really feel like matters related to the Ellis Act, we look to the Housing Department to be our guide. That's not for us to decide. We don't have that expertise. So I would actually like clarity from the city attorney. If he could just, once again, just clarify, and maybe Lisa, what is actually within the scope of what the Planning Commission decision-making? Because I feel that the council office has also put on us that somehow I'm not a housing advocate, even though I've spent a 30-year career as a housing advocate, if I don't grant this appeal. And I find that a little difficult to hear. I think there are a few of us here that see ourselves as housing advocates have also made a significant stake in our careers doing that. But I feel that within my understanding of my role as a planning commissioner and where I have to operate, I have no place except to deny the appeal, just as Vice President Newhouse has said. So I'd really love to hear just some clarity here, because I just, again, I think we're being asked to grant an appeal based on things that are completely outside of our decision-making realm.
Thank you.
Commissioner, this is Lisa Weber with City Planning. You're absolutely correct. That was very well stated. What's before the Planning Commission this morning is the appeal of a land use entitlement utilizing the provisions of the Transit-Oriented Communities program that was created through Measure JJJ. A whole separate department, the Los Angeles Housing Department, does administer the provisions of right of return and various housing protections. Jane, do we have housing? We do have a representative from LAHD here with us today, if there's a desire to hear from that department.
Okay, thank you. Before we hear from that department, Commissioner Klein, did you have any, or sorry, Commissioner Mack, did you have any comments? Just forgetting.
I had a thought, and because I was skipped, I forgot it.
why don't we just go to Commissioner Klein and come back?
Okay, go ahead. I have similar comments to what Commissioner Zamora and Commissioner Newhouse stated and Commissioner Cabildo. I find myself in a very difficult position regarding the appellant's statement here. I would like to get staff's opinion whether or not we think the Housing Crisis Act has no bearing on this. I assume you looked at that and about the timing. Can you reflect that and tell us what the rules are? And then the Housing Department would be good to hear what the relocation package that has been offered. In addition, I'd like to hear from Council's office about, it stated that you've worked with the applicant to negotiate a more adequate package. Are we really talking about, you know, a tremendous addition, or is this something feasible that could get worked out? So that was three questions in one. Apologies.
And you covered mine, so perfect.
The
is Jane Choi for the record. I'll start in response, and others can join in as well. But the entitlement appeal before the commission is the transit-oriented communities and Vermont Western Snap's specific plan compliance review. And kind of around all of this is compliance with state laws. So that includes SB 330, SB 8, which is considered the Housing Crisis Act. The Housing Crisis Act has multiple components to it. There's the requirement for replacing protected units. There's the requirement for relocation, right of return, first right of refusal. When we go through the entitlement process, we ensure that through what's called the replacement unit determination, or RUD, that the applicant is that's proposing the new project is providing adequate replacement units, and that is conditioned in our determination letters. The relocation, right of return, right of first refusal, that is all handled through the housing department, and also as an obligation to the applicant. So ultimately, the owner is required to comply with these state laws. What is being raised in terms of not complying with SB 330 and SB 8 is regarding this finding that there is a specific adverse impact because of this project. As Yamilet stated in her presentation, the bar to find that specific adverse impact is very high. And we have to find that there is some written public health law that is being not met because of this project or violated because of this project. And this component of the Housing Crisis Act mirrors the language in the Housing Accountability Act. So the ability for the city to deny a project on a specific adverse impact to health and safety is rare, and we did not find that those facts existed for this case.
May we hear from the individual from LAHD?
Good morning. My name is Emma Garcia, and I'm a senior management analyst with the Housing Department. So the Ellis Act allows tenants to occupy their units until 120 days from after when the owner files the notice of intent to withdraw with the housing department, or up to 1 year if the tenant is disabled or elderly. The owner must give the tenant more time if they anticipate the start of construction activities cannot commence within the 6 months after tenants are required to move out. Here, the tenants were provided a one-year extension under the Ellis Act and were required to move out by February 5th of 2025. According to the record today, it indicates that two of these units continue to be occupied with a pending unlawful detainer in court. The owner would have to start construction activities no later than 6 months after the tenants are required to move out. So that construction, that start of construction activities is somewhere in the future. As long as it's within the 6 months of the tenants must move out, we don't see an issue with that. The owner did provide proof of relocation payments into escrow accounts under the names of each of the tenants at the property. And the owner paid the amounts in compliance with the RSO. Which range anywhere from $12,950 to $24,650, depending on the specifics of the tenancy. Therefore, the owner is in full compliance with the RSO and the Ellis Act provisions.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful for us.
So there, so you don't know specifically how much they got?
That range.
It's just the range?
We do know specifically how much each individual tenant received.
Oh, it was in that range, is what you're saying?
It was in that range, correct.
Okay.
And just to further clarify, so two prior residents receive relocation benefits and two remained in the property. Is that correct?
According to the record today, if there are two remaining tenants with a pending unlawful detainer, that seems to be the case.
Right, but are there two other residents that did receive relocation benefits? That's what I'm asking.
Oh, right. Under the terms of the escrow accounts, the tenants would have been able to withdraw the funds upon moving out. So we could verify that, but we have not been informed by any tenant that they were denied the funds from escrow. And the escrow funds, the escrow instructions, have to comply with city regulations as well, and the copy of the instructions we have do show that they complied with the Rent Adjustment Commission regulations.
So I have a clarifying question, but wasn't sure if you finished. So there have been deposits into escrow made for all four units.
Yes.
And two units have moved out and taken their funds. And we have two units that have money in escrow sitting for them to draw down when they're ready to, right? That's what you said, right? That there are
yes.
four units, there's escrow, there's money sitting there for these tenants. So the relocation packages that the remaining tenants are on top of what is required by the city ordinance, correct? Or is that likely?
The city ordinance, I'm sorry, I want to be sure I understand the question.
So basically right now, per the City of LA ordinance, there's a certain amount of escrow that's required depending on whether the tenant is elderly and disabled or not. So when we hear from the tenant here that they're not satisfied with the relocation, is it safe to assume that they're actually asking for more than what the RSO requires?
We need to know specifically what their basis for asking for more money is. There are provisions in the municipal code that say that if a tenant is entitled to more money under other laws, then the tenant should be paid whichever is the highest amount.
But it has to, you're saying if there's an existing law that requires more,
yes,
they're required to be paid that.
Yes.
Is that what the tenant is asking for? Or is the tenant asking for beyond what is legally required? And again, I think this is outside of our jurisdiction, so I feel uncomfortable, but because it was opened up, I'm curious.
Well, the tenant...
And if, say, the tenant is saying, you know, I had to pay uniform relocation code when we did development, right? Which is a very different standard. So if the developer were using public funds, then they would have a different standard for relocation. So you're saying if, say, under uniform relocation code, they had to pay more, they would have to. But that's not actually happening here, right?
So the housing department has not, to my knowledge, been directly contacted by the tenants to explore the specifics of their allegation. But the council's letter does make a reference to the RPO, which does not apply, right? Because the RPO is a new law. But the RPO was intended to mirror state law requirements for relocation. And so that is effective February of this year. But the state law obviously was prior to February of this year.
One more question. The two tenants that are remaining, are either of them low income so they would have the right of return?
Per the red letter, the four RSO units that were conditioned, one unit is restricted to low income, two units are restricted to extremely low income households, and one unit is restricted to very low income households.
I'm not getting my question answered. So do you know what the income levels are of the tenants that are remaining and the tenants that have left, or do we not know that information?
Yamila Brisola with City Planning for the record. So from my understanding from the red letter is that two units did provide income verification. I'm not clear if the two remaining tenants are the two that provided the income verification.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I think that we're dealing with a fact of whether or not they can fall into those levels of affordability. The existing tenants, they're looking at a tremendous rent increase that may be at 80 to 120%, which are not being offered by the property, which I understand is not being proposed.
I have a question of housing. So under the new state law, how does the relocation compensation change?
It's a completely different formula, completely different approach from the RSO. The RSO has very specific amounts in a chart that change every year, and the factors that determine the amounts are disability, age, minor children, income, and length of tenancy. But under the state law, that's a process that the LS does not incorporate. Not until the RPO, really. So prior to RPO, there was no incorporation of the state relocation process. So my knowledge of that is limited because it's not within the scope of what housing has done in the past.
I mean, you know, again, there's not really anything we can do, is my understanding, in this situation, but just to, you know, kind of capture the challenge for tenants, and $12,000 to $24,000 sounds like a lot of money, but really, in our real estate market, I have heard stories, and, you know, luckily I bought my house in 2000, so I don't have this problem, but if I had to be in the rental market now, and I'm a, you know, well-paid person, it would be a challenge to actually find something that I could afford. So it's not really, you know, like, how do we create a system where this replacement or this compensation actually matches what it costs to rent an apartment in Los Angeles? The issue is that people, when they have to leave because of this situation with the market, their lives are completely upended. So they cannot afford to actually, you know, keep the same lifestyle as the appellant stated. So, you know, I'm expressing the frustration of both the fact that we can't do anything, but also that the system is not responsive to the needs of our citizens. So, you know, I'm hoping that there is some policy work around this that actually starts to, you know, be responsive to what the real needs are so that we're not creating a situation where people are, you know, having to upend their lives or they end up on the street, you know, whatever. You know, it's a real challenge for us as a city.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that, you know, you understand the frustration that the commission is feeling. We have a very narrow path on this one. It's a TOC appeal is what we're looking at. The fact that there's a dispute on relocation and the amount, as others have stated, is not really in our purview. Furthermore, it's unclear whether the two remaining households who have not accepted relocation benefits that are reportedly sitting in an escrow account somewhere, we don't know why, we don't know what their income is, and frankly it's none of our business in this particular setting, but I think it is important for the housing department to understand in this case and others that come that we've seen before and will come, That there's a financial disconnect, particularly for low-income and very low-income households, when they're needing to relocate because the building is going to be redeveloped. And I agree that there does need to be some policy work around this to fix it, but this is not the place or the time to do that. So with that, I would like to make a motion that we accept staff's recommended actions, that we deny the appeal, sustain the Director of Planning's recommendations, and adopt the Director of Planning's conditions and approval of findings, and determine that the project is indeed exempt from CEQA.
I second.
Before we finalize, you want to take the vote, no more conversation. I just want to underscore and you know, kind of our side conversation. We do have the policy. Unfortunately, it doesn't apply in this case because of timing issues. So I want to just put that out there for the record.
And may I just suggest to the applicant and the City Council office to continue discussions regarding the relocation payments on this project.
Thank you for those comments. Cecilia, we have a first and a second. Please call for the vote.
Cecilia Lamas for the record. Commission President Lachey?
Yes.
Commissioner Cabildo?
Yes.
Commissioner Cho?
Yes.
Commissioner Klein?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Zamora?
Yes.
Commission Vice President Newhouse?
Yes.
And the motion carries.
Thank you. And I'm closing item 10, and let's take a 10-minute bio break before we pick up the last item. The time is now
11:16.